Season 2, Episode 1. And we've gone out on the World Wide Web. We're gone 6,100 kilometres away from my little base here in Cork. And we're over in Nashville in Tennessee. And I'm delighted to be joined by the fantastic Johnny Hansen. Johnny, how's it going, bud? You're very welcome.
Great. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. I'm very delighted that you're here on 4Play, where you've picked four tunes that you've written that are most personal to you. I can't wait to get into the nuts and bolts of it, because I have to say the four songs that you sent me are absolutely, they're class. They're really class. They're fantastic.
Oh, thank you.
So the first one that you picked was Feels So Good. This is your own work, but under a different name, Walker Reinhardt. Why did you choose this one, Johnny?
Well, this song, I love the way this turned out. And this was also a song that my wife, Ashton, inspired the lyric, but I had the song and I had the little riff, which I felt like was kind of a Scott Joplin-esque sort of ragtime feel to it in my mind, you know, also like a little bit of that early Paul McCartney.
Yeah, there's a real Beatles kind of feel off it.
I love the Beatles. Yeah. I mean, I'm just such a sucker for all their stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So it's hard to not pull that in to my influences and whatnot, but and also Harry Nilsson and also Richard Swift actually was a big influence on this one, I would say. And he's someone that is a producer songwriter. Are you familiar with him at all?
No.
So he's a great, amazing producer writer, and he unfortunately passed away a few years ago, but I got to know him a little bit. But he was a big influence when I was like songwriting, I would say. And he's worked with, you know, the Shins and Black Keys, and was kind of playing bass with them and doing some production work with Dan Auerbach of Black Keys and stuff like that. But anyway, so if you listen to that, you'll kind of hear that. And also Elijah Thompson, who's an amazing bass player, played with him during those days and also plays with Father John Misty now.
Okay.
I had him play bass on the song, you know, and I think he kind of heard that influence too, but with playing with Richard. So that's in there as well. I wanted to mention that because he's awesome and everyone should hear, you know, his music, I think, as well.
And you know what? I also got a vibe off of too, Tears for Fears, Sowing the Seeds
Oh, really?
Of Love.
Okay, awesome.
That kind of, but I also think that album that they had at that time with Sowing the Seeds of Love, I remember when that came out thinking, ooh, that's very kind of Beatles.
Yeah,
so that was obviously their influence.
I love them. I remember a friend of mine was tour managing them, and I was like, man, if their guitar player quits, if something happens, let me know, because I would love to tour with them. That would be so cool to be, the guitar player in that band.
Oh, I have to say, I absolutely love the opening lines of the song as well, right? I miss the golden days with no cell phones. I miss the way we would communicate face to face. I don't know what age group you are, right? But I'm 51. And yeah, I've welcomed and I've enveloped smartphones, technology, but I think maybe it's because I was raised in the 80s as well, the 70s and the 80s. There is a part of me does miss, I don't like how contactable we are now. You know, and
yes.
I think a lot of people hide behind texts and there's not enough face-to-face talking.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I also just, I mean, I fight that all the time because I know I'm guilty of it. I'm that person, but so I can't like judge, but I just judge us as a whole that this is not, I don't think it's a great direction, because especially when I see like a family or a couple at a table and everyone's just staring at their cell phone for the entire time, you know, or a group of friends, you know, I'll see a group of friends and they all stare at their phones. They're showing each other stuff on the phone, but it's all related to the phone, and they can't get past it. There's not a lot of eye contact, you know, so I definitely fight that. There's been plenty of times where I've wanted to get a dumb phone, you know?
I actually, a number of years ago, I gave up smartphone for about 2 years. And
oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, and it was one Saturday night, I was walking through the city here in Cork, and there was a bus stopped at a set of traffic lights. And when I looked, everybody on the bus, including the bus driver, were looking down.
Oh, wow.
And the Pink Floyd song, The Wall, came into my mind. I was like, wow, we're slaves to technology here. And maybe about an hour later, I was walking down another street and I walked past and there was a taxi cab, and there was four girls in it with the driver. But all four of them, they were obviously friends, I'd gone out on a night out, but all four of them were on their phones, and I had this little vision that the girl in the front was tagging them all on a night out with my girls, and they were all commenting, yet no one seemed to be talking in it. And at that moment I went, right, I'm done with a smartphone. So I got a cheap $15, as you'd say over there, 15 quid phone, that all I could do was make calls and send text messages, and I got slagged for 2 years. But you know what? I was happy out.
Yeah. Yeah, that's amazing. Wow. And now I'm sure that you're, if you're back now, it's probably, you've probably developed some self-control.
I don't have social media on it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
You know, I just have it on my iPad. So, you know, but my argument was when we went out on a night out then with my friends, I was the good crack because I wasn't stuck in my phone like everybody else was, you see, so.
Well, I respect that. I'm about to be on that journey, hopefully. So.
So this song feels so good. You said you wrote it around the time when you met your, is it influenced by your wife?
Okay. So yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't finish that story, did I?
Well, no, listen, I tend to go off on tangents, so stop me as well.
So do I. No, so do I. So, okay. Yeah. No, I recorded the idea. I mean, it was, I think it must have been 3 years before I actually finished writing the song. I just had that riff, ba-dum, bum, 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 dum, 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 dum,
yeah,
and I kind of had some of the progression, and then eventually I had the structure. And a friend of mine, Dan Ballard, who has he had the studio at the time in Costa Mesa underneath the flower shop, which was challenging at times because, you know, you'd hear footsteps above and be like, hold on, you know, let's wait. Okay. All right. Go. We'll do another take. But he was out of town. And he was like, hey, use the studio while I'm gone. You know, it's very generous of him. And so he had this beautiful Baldwin grand piano, and I actually recorded the piano there during that time because I had the structure. I didn't have all the lyrics, but I was like, I'm going to record while I have this piano available. And I also recorded the piano for Better Half of Me, which is a song we'll hear later there that same day, which is interesting. And then, you know, 6 years later, or whatever, however many years later it was. But anyways, yeah. So it sat there for a while. And then after I met my wife, and I kind of, with the lyric kind of it flowed out of me, I would say, because of her. She was kind of my muse, I would say, for the lyrics on that one.
Oh, that's lovely. And as a writer, are you a kind of a, do you come up with the music first, or the melody and the lyrics last, or kind of change? Yeah. Does it depend?
Usually, almost always, it's the melody. And I'm such a chord person. Like, I love chords. I love the way that they can, you know, shape a melody and shape emotions and change. And, you know, we don't hear a lot of, I feel like our chord vocabulary in pop music is kind of diminished. Most songs, you know, are three or four chords. But if you listen to songs, you know, even from the 80s and before, I mean, there are some really intricate, amazing melodies and chord progressions. And I feel like we just don't, for some reason, we don't utilize those as much anymore. But I still love to utilize them as much as I can. Regardless, you know.
Long may that continue, Johnny. There's not enough people, I'm afraid. Popular music is, I don't know, things have changed.
Yeah, definitely.
Things have changed. But will we have a listen to the first song, and then we'll come back and chat some more about it?
Yeah, great.
Okay, so this is Walker Reinhardt and Feels So Good. Ah, yeah. Feels so good. I love the line, and I don't need to be another modern man. I want to live like no one else and do the best I can. What was the thought behind that? Or what's that referring to?
Kind of along the same lines of just being that kind of technocrat, you know, or that not wanting to be a slave, like we were talking about, to the technical side of things and get lost in that virtual world that we kind of are all in. That was my thought behind that. Is that, I don't know. It was also this whole song, like the whole idea of it with that kind of Joplin-esque, you know, loosely, I'll say that. But I definitely can't play like Scott Joplin, but I wish I could. But, you know, just kind of that older time, that feel of like that music to me, when you hear ragtime, it just kind of has this, you know, whether it's really, it was really like that at that time or not, there's kind of this nostalgic view that we have of an era when things were simpler, right? And so I kind of wanted to capture that kind of like feel good, old timey vibe. So that's kind of all the lyrics are kind of based with that. And I also wanted to say before I forget that my buddy Kyle Fair played drums on this, and he just nailed it, because I had some samples in there that were in the demo, and I kind of fell in love with the samples and the beat that was being played. But and the drums were, it was a sample of Matt Chamberlain, who's one of my favorite drummers, played with all, you know, Tori Amos and Fiona Apple, Pearl, like tons of people.
He's a Pearl Jam guy, isn't he?
He started with Pearl Jam. Yeah. He's amazing. And he has this loop pack that he put out, and I used that in there. And royalty free, of course. it's actually not in the song. Kyle played drums and he put his own flair to it. But what happens when you take a sample like that and throw it into Pro Tools, it's like it might be at one tempo.
Okay.
And this particular loop was at a slower tempo, and I brought it into a much faster tempo. So all the little intricacies and ghost notes that he was playing become much harder because they're at this faster tempo. So anyways, Kyle had... he kind of had to do his homework with that one, but he's an amazing drummer and he did an amazing job. So I just want to shout out to him on that.
Cool. I'm curious in the line, right? It's lonely at the top, I know. So let's enjoy the bottom row, swing and sway and be alone. Now, I'm just wondering, right? Like, you were a touring musician and you toured with very big and very successful acts, right? But I often wonder that's quite a lonely existence.
Yes.
And now, you know, and you're kind of living in a bubble. But, you know, now you're doing your own thing and life is much quieter. It allows you to be with yourself, your thoughts and your music. And I was just wondering, was there a reference in there to that? Because that's what I wondered when I heard it. I said, must ask.
Yeah, definitely. No, that's so true. I mean, living in hotel rooms and, you know, your family becomes the tour bus and everyone on it, which I was fortunate enough to be with some artists that treated everyone like family. So that was cool. And I never felt too isolated, but definitely being away from loved ones, family members, girlfriends, wives, you know, or my wife at the time, or I still am married to her.
Not anymore.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
But yeah, definitely it can be lonely, and it can be like, okay, let's get home. And then also what happens is when you do get home, there's a thing called like post-tour blues or post-tour depression, which is, you know, you've been in this bubble and everything's kind of been laid out for you. Your tour manager tells you everything you're doing every single day. It's almost like the Twilight Zone. And then suddenly you get home and you have nothing going on unless you have a bunch of stuff lined up, which you don't always do. So, you know, you get used to that lifestyle and everything slows down, and then you kind of have this crash. So
how do you deal with that? Because, I mean... obviously, situations like that, you can see how sometimes people kind of go off the rails a little bit because you've all this time. How did you deal with that post-tour slump?
Yeah. I mean, for me, there were times when it was difficult, and I usually leaned on, you know, the partner I was with or friends. But I mean, for me, music always pulled me out of it. So having that studio in LA was amazing, and having it with two other friends and and Scotty, my studio partner that I have this project Casa Vant with, yeah, which we're going to listen to later, like being able to make music with him. So when I got home, I did have things going on, fortunately, because I had the studio to go back to, and I had clients that would come in and people I was producing and working with. But, you know, it's very easy to become like, you know, I'm just, I play guitar and I tour, that's all I do, or drums, whatever it is. And when you get home, it's like you're just fishing for that next gig, and that can be depleting. So I think what helped me is just rounding myself out a little bit and trying to, you know, I have my own music, I can work with other artists, I can produce, I can engineer, I can do all these things that keep me busy, because I think that idle time can drive you crazy sometimes.
How did you get into music first time, Johnny? I believe your family were very musical, were they, growing up? So you had a lot of influences.
Definitely, yeah. My dad had a band in the 80s that didn't make it off the ground, but they were great. They were really good. I think they just didn't know how to get it off the ground, which I relate to. But they used to rehearse in our house, and it was kind of like U2, Cure influenced.
Nice.
That alt kind of scene of the 80s, new wave. And so that was awesome to have that around, and he always had instruments around, so that helped. He had like a 4-track recorder. That was the first thing I kind of learned, this Tascam Porta Studio.
Oh yeah, I remember them.
Yeah, that was the first thing I learned to record on, and he taught me how to like ping pong tracks and do all that stuff. So eventually we got some like digital thing, which at the time we thought was cool, but now when I look back, I'm like, I would take the Porta sound. And then my mom, she sang top 40, and she actually did
as in
quite a bit of touring.
She was in the charts, top 40, is it?
Sorry, no, just singing top 40.
Oh, okay.
So she did,
okay.
Yeah, she didn't write on her own. She was just a vocalist, and she would sing at Holiday Inn, you know, at all these hotels.
Oh, wow.
And I remember going with her and eating at the buffet and watching her sing. So that was a pretty cool experience, you know?
Yeah. You naturally picked up instruments. So did you at home?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. My dad was he helped me with guitar, definitely. And because I never really took lessons, I think I took a month of lessons, and it just, I don't know, I just, it wasn't for me, I think, at the time. I didn't like the structure of everything. And
yeah,
I just wanted to listen to records I liked and learn, you know, the guitar players that I liked.
So did you learn to play by ear then? Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
And does your dad still play?
He does. Yeah. He does.
Is he still trying to get that band up and running?
Yeah, yeah. No, he plays at church, and he has actually, him and his friends have a band called, they call it the Turds. So, it's pretty amazing. Yeah, it's cool. No, he definitely still plays, and he's just such a big supporter of music, and always has been. So that's been amazing to have that, for sure.
Well, at what stage of your life did you realize that, you know, this is what I want to actually do, this is the path I want to go on?
I want to say the first time I heard the Beach Boys, which is, I mean,
yeah,
that was the first.
That's fair.
You know, hearing them for the first time, I remember in preschool, I my friend would pick me up from preschool, and I'd go to his house afterwards. And I remember his mom had some, I don't know, I think it was like Rhonda, Help Me Rhonda, or one of those songs from that era. And, I remember being like, who is this? What is this? You know, and asking, and the mom, you know, his mom was, so it was the Beach Boys. So I asked my mom, she'd buy me a tape, and she bought me a tape of the Beach Boys, Best of the Beach Boys Volume 2 or something.
Wow.
And I just wore that tape out. I mean, that was just amazing. All the sounds and the harmonies just blew me away. And then it was Zeppelin and Cream and, you know, classic rock and the Doors. And I went down that rabbit hole. So I would say, yeah, hearing that for the first time was like, I want to do this. And also, you know, just seeing my dad do it and my mom, I think that was always kind of a curse and a blessing in some ways.
Yeah, know? Yeah, yeah. I don't think there's a curse in anything to do with music. I think it's a blessing, really, to be honest.
Yeah, me too.
And it's funny, I watched, did you ever see that documentary Bob Dylan's son brought out, all about that Echo Canyon? Did you see that at all?
Laurel
about
Canyon?
Oh, God,
Laurel
is it called?
Canyon, maybe?
Sorry?
Laurel Canyon?
They all lived in California. They all lived in this canyon. You had the Beach Boys, Logan, Mamas and Papas and all that. Yeah. But there was the 50th anniversary a couple of years ago. So Jake Dillon and Beck, and they made this documentary where they recreated the music, you know. And so they took it out on tour. But they, in the documentary, the interview, like, you've Crosby, Stills and Nash, you've Brian Wilson, you've all these. But they were saying that literally everybody just lived down a valley and you just go into people's houses. But that when he wrote Pet Sounds, he literally in his sitting room, he had a piano and he had sand all over the floor, and he was barefoot, and that's how he wrote it. That's magical. So cool. It's magical to me, you know?
Yeah, he's a magical dude for sure. That's just...
Did you ever meet him on your journeys?
I didn't. No, I didn't, unfortunately. I got to meet a lot of my heroes, though, which was really cool. And Jeff Lynne was one of them.
ELO?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Oh, wow.
Big fan of them. Big fan of them.
And you can hear that actually a little bit in Feel So Good. You can actually hear the... Yeah,
that's for sure. I mean, that is, his writing is just so cool and clever. And just his melodies are just magical to me. And his arrangements are so cool, you know, from just Jeff Lynne is, I love everything that guy does pretty much. But I met him in London, BBC Radio 1. We did, Christina and I did a performance on the radio, and it was like two guests. It was some show they were doing where they would have two guests with the same name, and it was Jeff Lynne and Jeff Beck. So that was pretty cool.
Wow.
To meet Jeff Beck and Jeff Lynne at the same time, and we performed Crying by Roy Orbison for them, which was crazy. It's on YouTube somewhere, and I think you can see me shaking while I'm playing guitar.
And you know the way they always say, sometimes never meet your heroes because it can be disappointing. What was it meeting them? I guess it wasn't disappointing, though.
No, Jeff Lynne was, I mean, he was great. They were both really, really generous and cool. And I remember giving Jeff Lynne a download card for my Melanoid EP at the time, the band I had. And he said, what do I do with this? I don't know what to do with this. I'm like, it's a download card. You know, it was kind of that confusing transition when we were, you know, everything was more digital, and you know, you'd make those little business cards with a link on it, but I don't know if you ever heard it, but
it's probably in a drawer somewhere in his big mansion wherever he lives. So the second song now that you've chosen for the podcast, Johnny, is a song you wrote, and the Monroes have taken this up, and it's called Better Half of Me. Why did you pick this song?
So this song was a song that I had for a long time. I wrote it in 2016, and it just got put out, I think, this year, I think it was, yeah. But I wrote it for, I had been writing for the show called Nashville. It was all about the music industry in Nashville. And they, at the time, they were reaching out to songwriters, and you could submit a song, you could submit a voice memo of a song, and if they liked the song or it fit with the narrative of the show, they had T-Bone Burnett produce the first two seasons, and his wife, I think, created the show. And then another producer took over after that. But it was great because you could send an idea or not an idea, but a voice memo. You didn't have to send a finished production, and they would produce it. The actors would sing on it. So I sent, I had a few songs in the show, which was great. But by that time, there were so many writers submitting songs. It was like, you never knew if they were even hearing them. So anyways, I sent them this song, a demo of it. Never heard back, you know? And so I was just like, okay, they're not going to use it. Maybe it doesn't fit the storyline, or they don't like it, whatever it is. But, anyways, fast forward to the Monroes, who are my good friends, and I've been working with them, producing some songs for them, which, they're two artists in their own right that are married. It's Molly Kate Kestner and Brock Monroe. And they started a project together for the first time. So they were in Nashville. I didn't know they were in Nashville. And my wife and I went to this coffee shop in the middle of nowhere in Leaper's Fork, which is a place in Nashville, Tennessee kind of area that's out in the boonies kind of. And there's this little coffee shop that's a little standalone little trailer, you know. And anyways, we go there randomly, and they are there. So we're like, what are you doing here, you know? And I hadn't So anyways, I had played guitar with Molly and toured with her years ago before that, and they told me that they were working on this new project, and I said, come by the studio. So they came by the studio, they played me a few songs and said they wanted me to produce a few songs.
Cool.
And then I immediately thought of this song because, you know, I had thought about recording it myself, but it just never felt right. And I was like, they are going to be perfect for this song, their voices and just the fact that they're married, like the whole thing just fell together. And I played it for them and they said, you know, we weren't planning on taking on any outside songs because they are great songwriters in their own right. But they loved the song and they agreed to do it. So yeah, that's them doing the song. And
their harmonies are killer.
Right?
Oh,
yeah. I know.
Oh my God. Before we went on the Zoom call, I work in a radio station here in Cork, and I called one of the lads in and I was like, listen to this. And he was like, those harmonies. Oh my God, those harmonies. And they were, do you know what they reminded me of? Their harmonies, the Carpenters.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. That's this song too, a little bit, right? It kind of has a little bit of that.
It's got 70s. That beautiful, lush 70s kind of,
Yeah.
But all your stuff has a 70s kind of vibe. So, you know, that I guess that shows
didn't
your influence.
Yeah, definitely.
Anyway, we'll have a listen to it and we'll come back and chat some more.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is The Monroes, written and produced by Johnny Hansen, and this is called Better Half of Me.
We never needed much. We could rely on us alone. You have always been my home. Even when times were tough, we always had enough, and you always kept my spirits high. And as the time goes by, I'm so glad to be alive with you right by me.
Such a beautiful love song. Who was it written for?
Well, I will say it was written.
Don't get yourself into trouble now.
For an ideal candidate. Let's put it that. You know, it's to me, it's the idea of a perfect, almost perfectly imperfect love. You know, that leaning on each other, and it's so cool that it's a ballad through and through. I mean, they're both singing through the entire song, and it's to me, it's like they're both saying, you're the better half of me. No, you're the better half of me, you know? And to me, that's what's so cool about a relationship like that is if you can see your partner that way, and lean on each other in the hard times, and the good times, I think that then that's just the balance that you want. Obviously it's not always achieved, but
yeah, relationships, there's a lot of work goes into it to make it right.
Definitely.
To make them work. I love the line, there's nothing you could do to push me away from you. You know, I would never leave you lonely. And I always thought, you know, sometimes broken souls can try to push the one they love the most away from them because they just do.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Especially if you don't love yourself and you are in that place, or that broken soul place, or that place of self-destruction, whatever it may be. Yeah, it's really hard to, you start to isolate yourself, I think. And
I actually saw this song, it's a load of different videos of you and your wife, and the song is put to it. It's absolutely gorgeous.
And that's what's so great is I do think of her, obviously, when I hear this song, and we, I definitely think of her. And I didn't know I was writing it for her, but I think that's what it ultimately was, you know, and it was, that's the kind of love I want to have. But yeah, it was cool because the Monroes, they asked us to be in the video because Brock, who's one half of the Monroes, he directs all their videos.
Okay.
Does a great job. But he, they wanted to use our, because we had 8mm footage from our wedding.
Cool.
He was like, can we use the footage? And then we want you to be in it. And we're like, absolutely, let's do it. And at the time, Ashton was pregnant, which we have our baby now.
Yeah, your baby's beautiful, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
He's, oh God, beautiful, beautiful.
Yeah, he's so awesome. He's such a cool little dude.
And is that your first child, Johnny?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Wow.
That's our first.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're on the journey. We're just starting, you know, but
I know, I'm out the other end. I have a grandson now.
I know. Congrats on that.
Yeah, but he's five now. He started proper school, big school as we call it here, last month. So here's another transition now. The house is quieter. It's a little bit quieter for a reason, but sure, that's the journey of life.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's interesting. All the challenges that are on the way and the challenges, just how they shift, you know, it's like, it's always challenging. And I think you just never stop worrying about your kids or wanting the best for them, I should say.
Yeah. And if you don't mind me, where did you and your wife meet? Did you meet in the music biz? Was she involved?
We met on a dating app, actually,
it's the way to go.
I was, yeah. And at the time I was just not into it, dating apps, and I was just coming out of like a 4-year-long relationship. So I kind of skipped the whole dating app thing. When I had met my girlfriend before her, that wasn't really as popular. So anyways, someone put me on was like, you got to do the app thing and just try it. And so I tried it and my third date was her.
Wow.
So I got pretty lucky, I think.
That was your last date too.
Yeah.
That's fab.
So, and it was cool because Hinge, they used friends from Facebook. So immediately when we met, it was like, oh, how do you know this person? And she knew a lot of musicians because she owns her own PR firm. So
okay.
She works in PR and she originally came to LA where I met her to do acting, but she also did music for a while. She was in a band, kind of like a, you know, Talking Heads-ish. It was
a cool
band. Yeah. With her boyfriend at the time, who was an actor. And then she just decided she was better at PR than acting or music. So she decided to start her own firm. So now that's what she does. And she's great at it. But
oh, that's cool. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. And why the move to Nashville from LA? So you're originally from LA, aren't you? Irvine, is it? Is that where you grew up?
Yeah, Orange County, Southern California is where I'm originally from. You know, I was ready for a change, and it was also came down to brass tacks a little bit. It was just like I always wanted to have a studio in my house, and it just didn't seem like that was going to happen in LA the way we wanted it to happen. Mm. And we also wanted to have kids, and it was just there was also opportunity in Nashville for my wife because she was branching out. She has some offices in New York, some offices in LA, okay. and now in Nashville, Atlanta, which they're close by. So it was a little bit of all that. And it was just like, oh, look at the house that we can buy in Nashville as opposed to in Los Angeles.
The room we can rent in Los Angeles.
Yeah, exactly. So it was kind of like, and at that point, everything was kind of being, like online, you know, everything was remote.
Yeah.
So it was a good time to do it. And the remote thing is kind of carried over. So we still travel quite a bit when we need to, but, you know, and for me, it was like music is everywhere in Nashville. So there's not going to be any shortage of songwriters that I can work with. And,
True that. I mean, it is one of the meccas in the States, isn't it? I mean, I know lots of Irish musicians here, and they would be, oh, we just came back from Nashville and we recorded over there. And I'm like, yeah cool.
It's not just country anymore, which is cool. You know, it's all over the map musically. So,
yeah. Cool. Now, I read somewhere that you had a job and you were a musician, and then the opportunity arose to tour with Christina Perri. How did that come about?
Yeah. I worked in Parks and Rec for a long time, like okay. the show. I was doing my band Melanoid and just kind of playing with other local artists and playing on albums for local artists. But that was my day job, you know, and going to college and doing that whole thing. So, you know, ultimately I was like, my band is going to get signed and we're going to do this and this is what I'm going to do. But then the opportunity came through an email just randomly through my friend Wendy Wang, who's an amazing songwriter, musician in LA. And she had originally been asked to audition for Christina and she couldn't do it. And they asked her if she had any recommendations. So she recommended me. And I wasn't auditioning for anything. I wasn't trying to tour or anything. I was just trying to do my band, but then it just fell on my plate. And at first I thought, I don't think I want to do this, you know, because we were talking to a few labels and it felt like something was maybe going to happen. But, you know, maybe going to happen is a big maybe always. And even if it does happen, it's like, I know so many people that were signed and got dropped, you know, and it's very difficult. So I thought, you know, after talking to a few people about it, everyone was just like, you should just do this. And so I ended up doing it. And, you know, I'm still playing with her occasionally now. So it's okay. It definitely,
it's worked out well.
Yeah. It worked out well. And I'm glad I did it, but you know, the band did dissolve eventually. And I kind of thought I could do both, but it's okay. Cause it's still, the band was basically my solo project, and I'm still doing that. It's just under different names.
Obviously, when you went and you're touring with Christina, and I mean you went and you toured with Jason Mraz, Demi Lovato, loads of other people, but you're touring with her, so obviously you park your own solo stuff. But the creative side of you, like when you're on tour, okay, you're playing somebody else's songs, but the creative side of you wants to be also writing your own stuff. How did you deal with that?
Yeah, just riding on the road and knowing when I got home, I could record those songs, you know, and that's the beauty of doing the artist thing. And for me, it's been great because as much as I wanted to be the artist at some point, and not that I've shown that away now, but it's for me, it's better to be able to do production and still put music out. Because it's something I love to do and I love to write, I love to make music, but without the pressure of, I have to do this, I have to go on tour, I have to do this and you know, to feed my family or whatever. It's kind of something that I've been able to still express myself, you know, without having to make it everything.
Yeah, I hear you.
That makes sense.
Yeah, makes perfect sense. Now, we move on to the next song that you've chosen, Johnny, and it's Let Go, and the artist is Cassavant. I love this. This is grimy.
Yeah, definitely.
This is grimy. So tell me about this song. Why did you choose this one?
Yeah, so this is what I was telling you about earlier. My buddy Scotty Klaus, we had that studio together, and you know, he had song ideas, I had song ideas, and we would used to go into it because we each had our own little studios in the big studio space, and we would go into each other's studios and kind of be like, what are you working on? What are you working on? Eventually it was just like, let's just work together on all this stuff, you know? And we had, and the great thing about it was there was no box, you know? It was just like, do whatever we want. It doesn't matter. Just whatever fulfills us at the time. Let's just go crazy musically and just explore all the different corners of our minds or whatever you want to, however you want to say it. But
very free flowing.
Yeah, very free flowing.
No, limitless, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah. There was no pressure, no label, nothing to tell us that we need to fit into some box. So like this song, for instance, is it's a wild, you know, it was a song that I felt like was fun because I could kind of embody this character, and sort of this booze infused, drugged out, shady spirited character, you know? And that's kind of what I tried to persona, like that was the persona. It was just this kind of shady guy, just kind of cruising around. And, but it was like almost like a rap. I don't know. It kind of reminded me of like a Beck thing almost in some ways, okay. But not. And anyways, we had so much fun with it though. And all the like clav stuff and the wah clav, you know.
There's loads I love about it. I love that line. Just add some water to the bottle. You just add some water to the bottle. And I was like I remember raiding my parents' drink cabinet and filling the vodka with water. And then my aunts and uncles would come around for nights. And my parents and I'm looking at them getting drunk on water.
That's amazing.
I was saying, oh my God, this goes on everywhere.
Yep, you get the reference, exactly.
And what I love about the start of it, the piano at the start, it kind of reminds me of the piano you'd hear in a Western movie. Mm-hmm. You know, the old Western movies? But then I love when the drum comes in because it just sets the tone for the song.
Yeah, my buddy Garrett Powell played drums on it and he did an amazing job. He was in that band Millenoid with me.
Ah.
And we actually set up the drum kit and we set up a bunch of random percussion around him, trinkets and cowbells and weird broken cymbals and, you know, and just set him up wherever we could. And he just was going for it. And I mean, there's parts in the song where it sounds like two drummers to me, but it's all him.
Wow.
And he just, it was amazing to watch him do that. He's such a great drummer. But yeah, this was fun. And we had this clav in the studio that someone left there. And we're like, we have to use this. And this is the song we have to use it on. And hooked up the wah, you know, to the clav. And that's all in there. It's just a fun, crazy song. I don't know.
Well, we'll have a listen.
It.
We'll have a listen to it, so will we?
Exactly.
All right. So this is Cassavant and Let Go.
Let go!
Ah, yeah, some drumming.
Yeah, right.
Oh, I just love the dirty grime of that. There's just this, and even the vocal. I just love the vocal, yeah. The way the effect on the vocal.
Yeah, with the vocal, we definitely distorted the hell out of it, and then we also had ran it through a Leslie speaker and blended that in, which is, you know, the Leslie, the rotary.
Yeah,
it's basically just a spinning speaker, and that's in there too. But like, yeah, Garrett, I think I have video of him playing that in the studio. It's pretty cool. He did an amazing job. And then there's something else I was going to say about it, but oh, the tack piano. That's so the piano you're talking about, the yeah. Western kind of piano at the beginning. It's that's our, the tack piano that Scotty had in his. We put a bunch of brass tacks on the hammers, so it gives it that kind of metallic sound.
It's that kind of, you know, when the cowboy walks into the saloon and there's your man over in the corner playing and everybody stops and looks. It's that kind of piano.
Yeah, yeah. It is so cool. I think Scotty, because he had that riff, he started with that riff, and I think he sampled each key and then created that. That's why it sounds so weird, the way he did it. Because I think he was playing it first, but then he was like, oh, I think if I sample this, it'll sound cool. So that's a trippy song, but it's yeah, we had a lot of fun making. I think I had a couple of drinks before I did the vocals, too.
And is there, I mean, is Casavant a thing that you're going to pursue?
Yeah, actually, we were just talking the other, like last week, that we want to do another album. It's just making it happen now is a little harder. I mean, when we were in the studio together, at one point I was living in the studio and so was he, so it was easy for us to just, you know, go back between the rooms that we had there. And
whereas,
you know,
now it's emails, and,
yeah, now it's like I got to get him out here to Nashville for like a week. I think if we do emails back and forth for a while and then he comes here for a week, we could record everything, you know. But yeah, we want to do another album. Yeah, and I don't know if you've listened to the other stuff, but it's a fun project. It's just we haven't had, you know, we haven't really promoted it the way we should.
Yeah, I haven't, and I'll tell you the reason I haven't is because when I get the four songs, I immerse myself in the four songs.
Yeah.
But
take
now,
a chance and see what you think.
Oh, absolutely. I love nothing. One of my favorite things to do, we say on Spotify, is, you know, if you're playing an artist that you like, and then when it comes to the end of it, it starts playing similar artists.
Yeah.
I love that, because I found some absolute nuggets, and especially the last couple of years, all there was to do was just sit there and listen to music. We couldn't go anywhere, you know.
I love that. Yeah, I mean, that's what we need, people like you, tastemakers, you know.
I like that, tastemakers.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, another thing actually that I was kind of reading up on you, that and it's very cool, and I'm dying to ask you about it, right? But you coached guitar for Bradley Cooper for A Star Is Born. Tell me about that. So is that essentially you taught him guitar and taught him how to be a rock star? Is that kind of what that vibe is?
Well, yeah, pretty much. I've had the chance, the opportunity to teach a few actors, which was really cool, but it's definitely a crash course. So, you know, it's usually a couple months before production, so you don't have a lot of time to teach them. But I was going to his house 3 times a week for a couple months. And then eventually it moved to, I think it was the Warner Brothers studio lot. I think that's where we were, possibly. But it was a studio lot that we ended up moving to. And we were doing lessons, and he was, you know, he'd send me like, or he'd play me a voice memo from Lady Gaga, you know, and be like, this is one of the songs that we might do. And I'm just, you know, it was a very trippy experience, surreal kind of, but he was really cool, really generous, and just a cool dude, just very down to earth.
Did he pick the guitar up handy enough? Like, is he a good guitarist now?
Well, he knew a few chords going into it, but he definitely was a beginner, and a lot of it is looking the part, you know, and it was like, I'm not gonna be able to, you know, make you a great guitar player in a couple months. It's not gonna happen. So a lot of it is, you know, him filming himself and saying, like, what about this? How does this look? And ultimately, he directed the film. So I think he was pretty clever in the way that the camera would be spinning around and there was just a lot of movement. And you never really, there weren't like, you know, still shots necessarily where he's just strumming away necessarily. But So yeah, it was kind of, I remember teaching him like stuff he wanted to learn too. Like he really wanted to do Radiohead Creep, which I'm a huge Radiohead fan. So I'm like, yeah, let's do that. And, you know, taught him some Beatles songs, some Elvis songs he wanted to learn. I forget. That's All Right, maybe. Elvis. So yeah, it was just kind of like, let's learn a few things along the way. And, you know, I was kind of hoping the lessons would continue, but yeah, they haven't so far.
And have you stayed in touch, or like once that project ends, is that it then you move on, or have you stayed in touch with him?
A little bit, you know, briefly. I mean, he's a busy guy and I don't assume that we're going to be best friends or anything, but you know, I've texted him about, you know, when I had my baby and he responds, you know. So I mean, we've stayed in touch briefly, like in that manner. Yeah. And it's kind of like, hey, if you ever want lessons again, or want to like try your hand at songwriting, hit me up.
And there's also a guy, he's going to be in Stephen King's The Stand.
Yeah, Javon.
Yeah.
Adepo. Yeah, he's an amazing actor, just like Bradley. And he was great to work with. So I worked with him for The Stand. Okay. And now he's in a new film that's coming out. Oh, I don't know what it's called, but it looks amazing. And he's playing, I think he's playing trumpet in it. So I'm like, oh, now you're learning the trumpet. Are you just taking musical roles?
You have created an animal. Look at what you've done.
Yeah. He's really cool. I've kept in touch with him. So he's a great, great dude. And he did Fences with Denzel. So
okay,
he used to tell me like a few stories about Denzel and, you know, Denzel giving him whatever, you know, advice in the industry and stuff like that. But pretty cool.
Yeah, actually, on TikTok, I have an awful lot of Denzel Washington scenes from his movies. People, you know, you know the way TikTok works. And he's just, I love Denzel Washington. Oh, do you know what I mean?
Amazing.
You just stop and you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Same.
See that movie, The Hurricane?
Yeah.
See that one?
Yeah.
Oh, so good.
And Morgan Freeman's another one. I remember when I saw Shawshank Redemption when it came out in the movies way back when, 96, 97. And I was living in Dublin at the time. And I saw the movie on a Thursday. And then my parents travelled up from Cork to Dublin at the weekend to meet me the following weekend. So we're walking through College Green in Dublin on the Sunday. And who strolls towards me? Morgan Freeman.
No way.
And I was kind of standing there going, That's your man. That's, look, I was there, Mom, Dad, look who it is. And they were there, run over to him. And I was like, nah, he's with his kids. I'm not going to bother him, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe I should have his voice. Oh, God.
I know, it's so cool.
It is killer. Anyway, enough about Morgan Freeman. Let's get back to you. And the final song that you've picked, Johnny, same drum. And it's under the name Walker Reinhardt again. Why'd you pick this one?
So this, I'm going to be releasing this soon. And I did. So this song was recorded when we were all in lockdown in LA and, things were just, you know, locked down. I remember grabbing a few things from my studio, just a few essential things, a couple keyboards and like a small interface. And I set up a little studio in our house, in Glendale at the time when I was living in LA. And I was, you know, just figured if I'm not going to be at the studio, I want to just be able to like do some writing. So this was something I wrote during that time and it came very quickly. I recorded it and wrote it in a day and it just kind of came out of me. And it was, I later replaced the drums with my buddy Kyle Fair played on it, but the song was pretty much finished in that day. And it, to me, it just kind of touches on the human condition and just our own mortality and just like the question of what does it all mean and that we're all in the same boat. We're all, you know, none of us have it figured out and, you know, nor will we ever. And, you know, and it is what you make it, I guess. But it's kind of that. And then also my mom was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. A little before the whole COVID thing happened. And then it was awful because
you couldn't see her then, could you?
Couldn't see her. And she passed away a year ago. And,
I'm very sorry to hear that, Johnny.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. So it was a rough year for my family for sure. A rough couple of years, I should say. And, I think this song it kind of came out of a lot of that stuff that I was dealing with.
And how are you doing now? You know, they say time is a healer, yada, yada, yada. How are you? How are you doing with it all?
Good. I'm good. You know, I'm doing better. And luckily my family is all very close, and we were all very close to her. She was like a big light in our family. And, I think that light is still carried on in me and my brother and his kids. And she was just so involved with all my brother's kids. He has four kids, and they were, you know, she was like another mother to them. So, I mean, seeing them, they all gave speeches at the funeral, which I thought was very brave of them. And they were, you know, they're pretty young, some of them, high school and, you know, early college kind of years. And, it was just beautiful to see the impact that she had on so many people's lives, you know, including their lives, but also just, yeah, there were a lot of people that showed up to the funeral. So, anyways.
Okay. Yeah. We'll have we'll have a listen to the song. So this is the same drum.
Funny how we stay up in the evening till dawn, drinking, loving, laughing until all the pain and heartache are gone. I was away for many years. I tried to find myself, but I did what I did, and I said what I said. I can't repeat it all again. I can't go back on what I did. We all have our questions. Is life just a lesson? We're reaching for something beyond comprehension. Face all our fears. There'll be nothing to run from. Don't you forget that we all beat the same drum together as one. All beat together as one. Follow blindly if you knew that everything would be alright. Or would you do it my way and ignore all of the sound advice? I gotta wake up in the morning and decide if I just lay here and die. But you were a light. You came and found me in time. And I was in the lake of fire. I wasn't in it for a swim. We all have our questions. Is life just a lesson? We're reaching for something beyond comprehension. We'll face all our fears. There'll be nothing to run from. Don't you forget that we all beat the same drum together as one. All beat together as one. All beat together.
I love the line, I've got to wake up in the morning and decide if I want to be productive or just lay here and die. But you were a light, You came and found me in time. I think that's beautiful.
Thank you.
So what's next for Johnny Hansen? What does the next year hold? I mean, I guess, you know, the last couple of years was probably perfect for writing and so on and so forth. But now, like here in Ireland, everything is back open again. Yeah. Gigs are aflowing and people are going out. People are going to see any type of gig because they were starved of it for so long. So what's in the plan for you? I know the baby is here right now, so that probably is the next little while. But surely you're going to go back out and play, are you? Are you going to tour some of this stuff?
Yeah, you know, I've thought about it. I definitely want to do some shows around here. I'm not sure exactly what's going to happen as far as touring, with my own stuff. I'm probably going to go out. I've been touring with this artist, Bryn Elliott, playing guitar for her. And so
she's cool.
She's awesome. So she's probably going to go out again. I'll probably do some stuff with her. Possibly Christina. I'm not sure what's going to happen there, but,
what's stopping you touring your own stuff?
The investment.
It's fair enough.
You know, you know, that's a big part of it. I'm waiting for something to happen, you know, and I need to probably be a little more proactive with promoting some of the stuff, but, you know, I am planning on recording more music. I'm probably going to put out an EP before the end of the year, actually, that's going to have a handful of songs that have just been sitting on a shelf for years.
And would that be Walker Reinhardt?
Yeah. And I think I'm going to call it Odds and Ends because that's what it feels like. You know, it feels like Odds and Ends. It's going to be kind of just an EP of songs that have just been sitting there that I want to just get rid of because I feel like they're kind of hovering on my shoulder and I want to just get them out into the world so I can start writing some new stuff. But so that's something I want to finish. And then I'm also working with the Monroes some more. We're doing a few more songs that are going to be coming out. I wrote a song called Blame It on the Weather with Molly Kate Kessner that she's going to release.
Cool.
Featuring the Monroes, and she's one half of the Monroes. But that's a song that we wrote a few years ago and we finally finished. It just got done being mixed and mastered. I think that's going to be coming out in November. Yeah, that's for the most part, I'd say, what's going on. So an EP before the end of the year and some more music with the Monroes. And
amazing. Yeah. It's been a pleasure, Johnny.
Yes.
Thanks so much for coming on, man. I'm going to tell you how I found you. And this is funny.
Yeah, actually. I wanted to
yeah, okay. So a couple of weeks back, I was on Instagram. And you know the way you sometimes just go through Instagram stories and one plays into the other. So there was this sponsored Instagram story and there was this song playing in the background. And I was like, oh, what's this song? So it was the Christina Perri song from the vampire movies.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
1,000 Years. Yeah,
1,000 Years. So it was that song and I was like, oh, I recognize that song. So I went and I typed in and I was like, oh, cool. So then I was playing the song and I was like, oh, this is a beautiful song. I remember this. But me, when I like a song, I like to go looking for an acoustic version of it. So next thing I went, oh, I'll put in the song acoustic. So next thing came up live in Ryan Seacrest and it was you and Christina singing. But then I found a better version of it on a thing called The Live Room where it was you, Christina and a guy on a piano. And
right? David Hodges. Yeah,
I was really taken by the connection that you and Christina had when you were singing. I was there going, Jesus, this is I'm all about connections, and I just thought, I was like, who's this dude?
Yeah.
So I found out who you were, and then I found you were on Twitter. So went onto Twitter, and you'd posted that there was some Walker Reinhardt video up, and I commented, and you commented back, you answered back, and I said, okay, I'm going to DM this guy. And just throw it out there, see if he wants to be on the podcast. I didn't expect a reply, genuinely. So I sent the DM, and the next night, when I went on Twitter, you'd replied. And
that's so awesome.
And here
we are. I hardly ever go on Twitter, I will say. So like the fact that I even found it, because we weren't following each other, you know. So
yeah.
It was in some weird area of messages. And I think I was cleaning out some stuff. But anyways,
And here we are. Just one last thing before we do go, and it's a question I ask every artist. What's your preference, on stage or in studio?
In the studio, hands down.
Why?
Yeah. Because I like I like performing, but to me it's very restrained in a lot of ways. Sometimes it's also different for me performing with another artist where everything's a little more calculated. I would say performing my own stuff, there's a little more freedom in it, and I like that, but there's nothing like, you don't get the freedom that you get as just being in the studio and exploring, making mistakes, you know, putting a song upside down and flipping it horizontal and just finding that magic. That's my favorite thing, whether I'm working with another artist or on my own stuff, just searching for that magic and discovering things with people. And that's just so cool to me. It's sometimes you have a show where you really connect, and then sometimes you have a show where you don't. But and those times are great, obviously, when you're connecting with an audience. But it's just a different thing, and I'd rather be behind the scenes for the most part. I enjoy that. So
yeah,
performing's not, you know, number one.
And is there a pressure when you're playing live with another artist, mm-hmm. but you're playing their stuff? Is there a pressure, a different, you know, when you're playing your own stuff and you're playing it live, it's your own stuff and you're really feeling it.
Yeah, definitely.
But when you're playing somebody else's stuff, you know, there's also the pressure. Got to get this right.
Oh, yeah. 100%. When I play my own stuff, if I've dedicated, I'm playing the show, by the time I get on stage, I'm not worried about messing up. You know, I want to just perform and convey what I have, you know. Then again, if I have a band behind me, it's a different dynamic again, because there's a lot more elements. But if I'm by myself, that's where I feel the most comfortable, usually, I would say. But yeah, you're right. When performing with other artists, especially like in the pop world, everything is very calculated. And when you play a big pop show, a lot of times, you know, you have a click in your ear and everything is just mapped out to a T, the entire show, the space between the songs, everything is very tight because you're fitting into that slot, and everything's, yeah, calculated because you're trying to put on the best possible show you can every night. So there's that consistency that you have to shoot for.
What's the biggest crowd you ever played in front of, Johnny?
Probably, I think it was Gillette Stadium opening for Ed Sheeran. I think it was like 80,000 people or something crazy like that. Or Hard Rock Calling too was a festival that had a ton of people there. But I think it was about 80,000. Maybe.
I have a friend here in Cork. Jerome Rimson is his name. He's a bass player, but he's from Detroit. And he would have played now with the Detroit Emeralds back in the 60s. And then he played with Van Morrison, Killing Joke, and Phil Lynott. He played with Phil Lynott. Phil Lynott was his best man at his third wedding, you know. But I can tell you the stories now. 70s and 80s rock and roll. You can imagine,
yeah.
Right?
but
it was funny when you were saying about being in a studio and when you're doing your own stuff and making the mistakes and all that. And he has a funny story. He goes, man, he goes, if I make a mistake, I just make sure 4 bars later I make the same mistake, and then it's not a mistake anymore.
Exactly, yeah.
But his biggest crowd, he said he played in front of, it was the Isle of Wight Festival when he was playing with Van Morrison. He said it was 100,000 people there. But he said they came up in the stage through these lifts, so they came up into the stage. And he said, as soon as you're coming up, he said, all he could see was just a sea of faces for as far as he could see.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
incredible, though. But he lives here in Cork now. I mean, Jerome is nearly 70 now, and he plays like in a blues band, and he plays in a lot of cover bands. And I remember I was in his flat one day chatting to him, and I said, Jay, I said, like, the career you've had, you were involved in Motown, and then you were involved with some of the biggest acts in the 70s, and I mean, Phil Lynott is probably one of the biggest artists ever to come out of Ireland. I said, now you're going and you're playing in a function down in West Cork to 100 people. I said, how does that feel? And he said, brother, he said, if you'd have told me that at 68 years of age, I'd still be earning a living with this baby. There you go. He said, that's all that matters. He said, I don't care. He said, I have the stories. I've done it all. But he said, the most important thing is I'm still at this age making a career and a living from the thing I love the most.
That's amazing. Yeah. And what's funny about it is sometimes a show in front of 80,000 people is less nerve-wracking than a show in front of you know, seven people.
Anyway, Johnny, I'm not going to hold you any longer, man. It's been an absolute...
Yeah, thank you for meeting up with me this late, too.
Oh, man, no, it's fine. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Likewise.
Someday I'll get to the States and someday we'll have a beer, my friend.
That would be amazing. Hey, you know, maybe I'll find you in Ireland.
Yeah, you're always welcome over here.